This is the Better Reading Podcast platform with stories behind the story, Jane's Be Better podcast, My Book Chat with Caroline Overington, and more. Looking for a particular podcast? Remember, you can always skip to it.
Welcome to the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story, brought to you by Belinda Audio. Listen to Belinda audiobooks anywhere, everywhere.
Hi, this is Cheryl Arkell from the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story. We talk to authors about how they came to tell us their story. Sheila O'Flanagan, what can I say? Welcome again to Better Reading.
It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you again.
Yeah. I can't remember when we spoke, but it was during COVID, and we thought that was the next time we would speak would be in person, but that never happened, did it?
No, it didn't, but I'm holding out hope that maybe in the next year or so
Hopefully. Let me introduce you. Sheila is the best-selling Irish author of 30 books, including Three Weddings and a Proposal, The Woman Who Ran Away, and Her Husband's Mistake. She has sold over 8 million copies of her books. After beginning her career in finance, she wrote her first novel, Dreaming of a Stranger, when she was in her 30s. She hasn't looked back since. So today we're talking about her latest novel, What Eden Did Next. It's a heartbreaking and life-affirming read about a woman who is ready for a new start 5 years after her husband died. Wow. So my mother died recently, so it is a book that really certainly resonated with me.
I'm really sorry for your loss. I think grief is one of those things that sometimes we don't talk about enough, and it's something that I definitely wanted to explore in this novel.
Talk to me about where the idea came from.
Well, interestingly, I guess, my ideas come from various sources and various different parts of the ideas come from different sources. But the concept of Eden and the way she's looking at her life was actually influenced a little bit by COVID and by the lockdowns and by the restrictions that had happened. Because, I was looking at things popping up on my diary, things that I should have been doing and things that I should have been doing with people that I couldn't meet and that I couldn't see. And I grieved for all those things, and I've really profoundly felt sad and depressed about those things. And I was thinking about that in the context of losing people forever. At least with COVID, I was thinking to myself, well, we will get through this. Eventually we'll get through this. But, I was looking at it from the situation of somebody who has lost someone. And of course, like you, sadly, I've lost people in my life too. And so I think COVID and those restrictions just connected me with that feeling. And so I thought about this character, Eden, who has lost somebody and the way she's lost, the love of her life and the person whose family have really supported her, because she's, for various different reasons, she doesn't have close family of her own. And, I was thinking about the situation she was finding herself in. She's raising her daughter on her own. She knows her husband is gone, but she can't quite let him go. And he's still a presence in her life. She writes to him, she shares stories with him and things like that. And I think we do that, when people are gone, we don't necessarily immediately stop. We never stop thinking about them, but so I was putting her in this place, but it's 5 years. The novel starts 5 years after the death of her husband. And she is beginning to feel that, ready to move on, although she's not quite accepting that she's ready to move on. And she thinks she's quite well and she feels well in many ways. But his family, who really loved him very dearly as well, are acting as a brake on her in some respects. Mm-hmm. And then she meets an old childhood friend. And the old childhood friend, coupled with an elderly patient of hers, because she works as a carer, but coupled with that person, start to make her look at life in a different way and start to make her, sort of analyze how she's feeling and probably try to find more joy in her life. Because up to now, although she's relatively happy. She's kind of existing. Mm. And now what she's doing is looking for the joy in her life again.
Do you know, of course it resonated with me, but also too, it made me think about, it's such a taboo subject. Like every one of us have experienced loss. And if you haven't yet, you will. You know, one of the things my mother used to say is life gets sadder as you get older. And I always wondered what she meant by that. But that was losing her friends over the years or experiencing loss. But we tend not to talk about it. And we don't see it all that much in fiction in a way that an author is living or a character is living their life. We see it in crime fiction, of course, but we don't see it where it has real meaning and the process of it. And I guess it's like, you know, if you buy a red car and then all of a sudden you notice all these red cars on the street. Well, what's happening with me now? I'm in the midst of grief. And I'm seeing it around me. You know, I'm picking up books like yours. I'm picking up other books. And all of them are written with such hope, I think, that I kind of need to hear that at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, somebody actually, when we were talking in a general sense about my book, said, oh, yeah. Do you always have to have a happy ending in your books? And I said, well, it's not so much that the ending has to be a happy ending in a very traditional boy meets girl and marries them and they live happily ever after. But I do like my books to be hopeful and I like them to be uplifting because, as you said yourself, you know, life does get sad. You know, there are, and at the moment, life is just really hard. There are so many things that we're having to deal with. And I think it's good to know that there is hope and good to feel a certain level of hope and be uplifted by a book. And well, I'm hoping that this is what Eden Does Next actually does.
Oh, definitely. And also too, for me, reading has been a solace. Pick up a reading where I'm feeling that at the moment is very meaningful. So I want to talk about your career because it's so extensive. I feel as though, I mean, you know, lots of authors go up and down with their writing and sometimes you'll have a book that isn't as successful as the previous or the next one or whatever. But you've been kind of consistent.
I hope so. I'd like to think that.
Yeah, you have, haven't you? What do you think the secret to that is?
Well, I think that when I sit down to write a book, I do have a very definite, I don't have a plan, you know, because I'm not a plotter. I kind of go by the seat of my pants and I work my way through it. But I do have the character very clearly in my mind and I care very much about the character I'm writing about. Mm-hmm. And so I feel that I am writing her story and I want to do justice to that, you know? Mm. And so every time I sit down and write, I'm, you know, saying to myself, well, am I telling this person as though they were a real person? Because they are to me, of course. Yeah. And so I'm trying to tell their story the best way I possibly can. And maybe that's it. You know, it's just that I care so much about the characters that I want the book to really be good. I'm sure there are some that are better than others because that's the way things go. But I'd like to think that they were generally consistent.
But you've had good sales numbers, haven't you, for almost every one?
Oh, I have. Yeah. I mean, all of the books have been bestsellers. But, you know, I have readers who just say, oh, I buy your book and I don't even look at the title. I don't look at anything. I just see your name and there's a new book and I buy it. And, you know, that is just, I mean, it's really, really gratifying, but it's a privilege that people will do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, especially for those people, you want to try and make sure that you're doing a good job. And so far, so good. And so far that, yeah, the sales have all been really good. And, you know, thank you. Thank you to the readers who just rush out and buy the books.
Now, I mean, I'm not a writer, as you know, but I'm going to describe this and hopefully you'll understand what I'm saying. What I like about your books is that when I'm reading your book, it's like that there's space, that the books aren't crammed, the story's not crammed. Does that make sense to you? Mm-hmm. That's what I get from reading them. And so I have time to breathe. I have time to ponder. I'm following the story. It's not like that there's so much in it that I don't know what that character's up to and what happened to the other one. Is there a term in writing for that? Because I don't know what that is. But do you agree with that?
Well, I actually completely understand what you're saying. I don't know the term for that. But, you know, I kind of look at writing books a little bit like, I'm going to say peeling an onion, but that's probably not a great metaphor because, you know, onions are notoriously difficult. But just peeling away layers, you know, and you pull one layer back and then yes. you see something else and you pull another layer. But you do need time. I when I'm reading myself, I like to be able to engage with the characters in the books that I'm reading, and I like to be able to follow them, and I don't want to be assailed by loads of things. You know, you like to kind of have the story evolve. And yes. do it in a natural way as possible.
But yeah, of course, I like that. The peeling.
You want to
layers.
Keep the reader. Yeah, you want to keep the reader engaged at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, what Eden did next, was that all written during COVID?
It was started during our bleakest lockdown, which was in the winter of last year, and I suppose, like I said, that was when I was really going through, you know, that level of grief myself for things we couldn't do. And so a lot of it, probably about two thirds of it or half of it was written during that lockdown period. And then we started to come out of that and restrictions started to be eased. And maybe that's when I was getting to the happier part of the story.
That's what I was going to ask. So did you look back at those words that you'd written during that time and thought, oh, hang on a second, I better brighten things up because now I'm feeling better myself.
Yeah. Funnily enough, my editor always says that, you know, when I start book, and because I'm, you know, whatever book I'm writing, you know, there is obviously some kind of core problem. And, you know, in the first draft of it, it's always bleaker. It's always much heavier. But yeah, because, you know, because of my book, but I was, sorry, I was aware that, you know, I was dealing with grief and I was dealing with this kind of situation. And, you know, my books, as we said, are hopeful. And I you know, there has to be dark and light in the book. It can't just spend your whole time, you know, pondering hard things. And so there has to be light. And I think probably when I was going back and editing it, I sort of increased the light and I increased the hopefulness of it. And but you have to write the harder bits and the darker bits and get into the, you know, the kernel of that and the difficulty of that first. And then you can come back and say, okay, hold on.
And also making it authentic and making it believable, you know, because some grief is a hard thing to describe.
Well, it is. And, you know, I think that the most difficult part of it is that it can come upon you so unexpectedly. You know, you can be doing something quite cheerful and then suddenly you're assailed by this memory of somebody. And it's like a real hit to the stomach, you know, I mean, and it just overwhelms you. And the one thing I find interesting, because I have lost people in my life as well. I lost my dad when I was quite young. And I stood there, I mean, that was over 50 years ago. And I still recall him, you know, it was 40 years ago, sorry. But I recall him, you know, really well. And you know, even after all that time, sometimes something will happen. I'll hear a sound, somebody will say something and I will be reminded of him. And I still feel exactly as I felt back then. But it's something you live with. I mean, it's not a constant thing that happens. But, you know, you shock yourself sometimes by how much you suddenly feel. And when you're writing something like that, you want to give that authentic experience feeling to the character. But of course, you know, that happens, but you get on with your day-to-day life as well. And you have recovered, you know, you still laugh, you still smile, you still enjoy yourself. But there is always that layer within you that has experienced the grief.
Do you know what I think too? I think it's such a deep sadness, grief, and you can wallow in it. But also too, what I have valued is the shared experience. Like the other night, a friend of mine asked me to dinner and her mum died years ago and her and I cried and laughed. And I thought, isn't that is a special moment in itself. And that's hopeful because for me, it's affirming knowing that other people have had the same experience or a similar experience, but at the same time that we can move on. Like I'm seeing her now 10 or 15 years later and that gives me hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And you do move on and you do recover. And it just becomes a part of your, I suppose, your life's experience and and the tapestry of your life. But yeah, I mean, I think it is important to talk about it. And I think as well, sometimes the people that are not experiencing the grief at the time, we want people to be better too quickly, you know. And I think that's the thing as well about Eden. It is 5 years, so that is a long time, you know. And yet to a person who has lost somebody, 5 years goes by in the blink of an eye. And so there's that balance where you're saying, oh my God, like 5 years, you know, definitely you should be off having a great time. And she is, she goes out, she does things.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's still another step you have to make sometimes.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's go back and tell me how you came to writing. I know that you told us in the last podcast and I remember, but so we might have some new listeners who would like to know how you came to writing.
Well, I mean, I think, as I would have said to you before, I always wanted to write, really. I was just a massive, massive reader when I was young. And my mom was really, really encouraging. She would read to us all the time. And because we both share this memory of her reading to me and me saying to her what happened next, you know, when she'd finish some story, and her getting really exasperated one day and saying, "You tell me what happened next." And I just kind of continued on with the story, and she's sitting there looking at me, you know, and she was very encouraging. And I just wrote pieces and bits of novels and things like that. And then, you know, when I got to my mid-30s, I'd been working in finance, and a colleague had asked me to write some technical stuff for them. I had to put time aside to do this. And it suddenly occurred to me that, you know, I was always saying one of the reasons I don't write is that I don't have time. And yet when they'd asked me to do this, I found the time. And I kind of said to myself, well, okay, let's see what we can do. And so for writing that thing for him, he paid me, and I had enough money to buy a laptop. And so I bought a laptop and I said, you know, I'm going to write a book. And so all of the ideas that I had, they all came to me, and it was very hard to actually kind of corral them into the first book. But I sat down and I wrote the first book, which ultimately became Dreaming of a Stranger, although what I wrote was a kind of prequel to that, with the characters at a younger age. And I sent it off to a publisher, and they called me back and said, well, you know, these characters are too young. I'm kind of thinking that now they would have called back and said, this is a young adult novel, and we don't maybe do young adult. But they said the characters are young. If you wrote them at an older age, we might be interested. So I kind of thought, well, do you think that you could do that? They said, and I said, oh, yeah, of course.
Of course
I could do that. And then I sat down and panicked for a day or two. And then I said, well, okay, you know, and I got back and I thought about the characters again. I thought, you know, when I'd written them, they were about 17 or 18. And I thought, well, you know, what would have happened to them? Yeah. And I sat down and I started to write that book that became Dreaming of a Stranger.
Because, you know, back then there wasn't that genre of young adult, was it?
No, there wasn't. There wasn't.
No. And
I mean, I don't know. If there had been, would my career have been completely different? Yeah. You know, I don't know.
Speaking of whether your career had been completely different, only just earlier today, I met some friends for a coffee, and we were talking about where we're at, you know, and how some careers are really linear, that, you know, you go to university, you study to be a teacher and you become a teacher and whatever. And I'm thinking, well, mine didn't happen that way at all. And yours, I mean, I guess you thought you were going to be in finance forever.
Well, the funny thing about finance for me was that it was, when I was looking at careers, finance was probably at the bottom of my list of careers.
Right.
I am not a numbers person, you know. And it is a mystery to me how I managed to be offered. Actually, at the start of when I was looking for jobs, I was offered two different jobs in financial settings. And I have no idea how. I really have no idea how, because I applied for a job in the library as well and I didn't get it. So it's like extraordinary to me that I ended up in finance. And yeah, I mean, for the time that I was there, because I was 20 odd years working in finance, for the time that I was there, you know, I was very, I suppose, concentrated on my career, and I wanted to do well in the career. And so I did my, you know, the professional exams you were meant to do, and I did all that stuff. But I think finance was something that I did, but I didn't, I was doing it for somebody else, or, you know, I was doing it for the company. I was doing it for a whole range of things, but I wasn't doing it for me or for my soul. You know, it was just something that was paying the bills, and I enjoyed it while I was doing it. You know, I did enjoy it, but I mean, I think it was something that you know, we used to say sometimes that the job we did was no job for an old person, you know, and you know, I did sometimes think to myself, God, you know, am I going to be doing this, you know, forever? And I guess, you know, when I started to write, when I sent off my first book to be published, it wasn't that I thought I was going to be the writer that I am now, but it was just, I was doing something for myself. And that was really, really satisfying. Yeah. And the fact that it has turned into a career for me, I just feel really privileged and lucky. I was kind of looking at my future career and thinking, okay, which way is it going to go? And where am I going to be? And all that. And I'm so lucky that it's ended up being, I'd say, probably about 180 degrees from what I was doing.
Yeah, because you're lucky in many ways that, you know, after 20 years to pivot your career is not easy, regardless of where you chose to go and where you came from. I mean, that's always tough, right? And also because we do get pigeonholed.
Oh, absolutely.
You take a CV out there and it's all finance. Well, they're the only jobs you're going to get.
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of think now perhaps things, especially in this post-COVID world, people are looking at their lives and their choices and everything in a different way. I don't know how long that will last for, you know, because we tend to get sucked back into a kind of a way of living. But I think people are more appreciative, certainly, of different choices. And in Ireland, the whole hybrid working from home, working from an office thing, which like 5 years ago when people were trying to do that, and then companies were saying, oh, no, absolutely not. And now we've realized that that is a viable alternative. I think people have got a different take, I suppose, on the work-life balance and what they want. And I think it is really important to sit back and ask yourself, what matters to me, you know, and what is the thing that I'm doing for my heart as opposed to my head?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I always think I've hit the jackpot with my career. I mean, always. I just think, I mean, you know, I get paid to talk to you. It's like, how joyful is that?
I'm going to say I'm going to your job too.
That's right. You know, you call this work, what? How did I get here? It's funny. Podcasts didn't even exist back when I was thinking about a career.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? And that's what's so great, I guess, about things, that the world changes and life changes and there are new opportunities. I think what's really important is to be able to take those opportunities, even when it's nervy, you know.
Yeah.
And in my case, when I decided, you know, I would have a go at making this a full-time thing, I mean, it was a leap of faith. I hadn't made any real money out of writing, but I felt I had to give this a go and commit more time to it because I'd been working and writing and you know, it wasn't sustainable in the long term. And I said, well, you know, you have to back yourself sometimes. And I felt, well, this is something I really want to do. If it doesn't work out, I will probably be too old for finance because it is a very young person's game. But I said, well, I'll get something else. I will do something else. But I need to do this for me. And I think it is really important that when opportunities are there to do something that really matter to you, that you back yourself and take.
At what book number did you go full time with writing?
It was actually after book number 4. The first 3 books were published by a very small Irish publisher, and they weren't published anywhere. They didn't get a huge, they did well here in Ireland, but they didn't get a huge reception. And it was, well, when I was starting to write book number 4, I just, after the 3 books, I said, well, if I want to make anything out of this, I will have to devote more time to it and I will have to be serious about it as a writer, because finance is very, very demanding. And, you know, there may be other jobs where you can divide your time better, but I couldn't in the job that I was doing. Mm. So that was the point where I said, okay, I'm just going to go for this now. And I think it does sound like, you know, I was sitting there writing 3 books and you know, not thinking about the future. But when I had written the first book, although the publisher had said to me, we might be interested, it was about another 2 years before it actually got published. So while I was waiting for that, I actually wrote the second book because I thought, well, you know, I've done it once, I'll give it another try. And I'd already started writing the third book. So I had finished the second book before the first book was ever published. So it was kind of a book ahead, you know.
Which must be a great feeling, because I speak to authors who, you know, signed 2 or 3 book deals and they've delivered the first and now they're so anxious about the second. So if you're one step ahead, that takes the anxiety out. Right?
Actually, it does. It really does. I mean, I didn't tell anybody that I was writing a book when I was writing.
Right.
When I was writing, because I felt that would put a lot of pressure on myself. And, you know, writing the book for me was such a personal thing. And I wasn't writing it like I was writing it and hoping it would get published, but I wasn't writing it for the money. You know, I was writing it to write a book and to say, yes, this is something you have wanted to do since you were about 5 years old and you have actually done it. And that was why I was doing it. And so I didn't really want people saying, how's the book coming along and things like that. You know, I just thought, do it at my own pace and do it, you know, just not have anybody ask me. And so I had written 2 books and nobody knew until the first book was actually published.
A lot of authors say to me, and I quite like this, they say that life is never the same again after you published as it was when you wrote your first book, because before then, you were just writing for the sake of writing. You didn't know whereas now you've got an audience, you've got a readership, you've got a publisher, you've got an editor. Is that how you felt?
Well, certainly it shifts, you know, when you're writing without any hope of publication, or not hope, but any expectation, immediate expectation of publication. You're not sending the work off to an editor or something like that. You're just going for it yourself. And there's a definite freedom in that afterwards, you know, when you realize, oh, this is what happens, you know, and you realize the whole chain of events that happen. You realize you're part of that, you know, and there are people who are waiting for you to do certain things before they can swing into action themselves. And so, yeah, you say to yourself, well, is this becoming a job? And there are certainly times, you know, that you think to yourself, oh, you know, this is a job. You know, suddenly this is another job, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think you want to think to yourself always that writing is just a creative joy. And there are parts of it. I mean, I look at it in 2 ways. I think there's the creating of the book and the writing of the book. And then there's stuff afterwards when you've sent it to an editor and there are things that happen. And that's a business thing. So I look at it as 2 different parts, you know.
Do you, with COVID, you know, we've had to do everything by Zoom or online. Have you missed the connection with the reader? Because I know you have enjoyed touring and you've enjoyed publicity in the past. Do you think that has impacted your work, not seeing readers as you used to, not getting that kind of direct feedback?
I don't think it's impacted my work as a, you know, as a writer. I don't think in any of the forms of creatively it hasn't, although not being able to go out was very difficult creatively. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people would say during COVID, oh, well, you're a writer, you're at home anyway, and now you must be delighted because you're at your desk and nobody can bother you. And you're thinking, yeah, that's okay for a day or two. But actually, I like going, when I'm writing, I'll take time and go for a walk and I'll sit in a cafe and I'll watch people and I'll get
observe
the
interactions.
And, yeah, exactly. And all we were doing was scurrying past people, you know, if you were out at all. So that I actually found quite difficult. But in terms of meeting readers, I did miss the events that we do because it is lovely talking to readers. It's just lovely getting that connection, talking about your books to people who enjoy reading and just talking about books generally to people who enjoy reading, because I think everybody in the reading and writing community likes nothing better than to talk about books and writing and stuff. So I did miss that. On the flip side, though, we managed to do quite a few Zoom events and things like that. And readers who couldn't come to physical events were able to come to those. And so that actually was quite good. And I hope we're able to kind of keep maybe a hybrid blend of doing live events and doing online events. But I certainly missed you know, when the book was published, going to a bookshop, meeting the booksellers, meeting the people in the bookstore and the readers who would come up and chat, and you'd be signing books to them. And you'd always have a lovely conversation with people. And I did miss that.
I think I would miss that too. We started live events. I think you did one for us one Wednesday night, and we will continue those. We will definitely continue those right throughout, because also a lot of people that have joined those events, probably they were in regional or remote areas. I mean, Australia's a big place, and they very often couldn't get to an event. So you're right, we need to do a hybrid. We need to do a bit of both. I don't know about you. I love reading readers' comments, because I think readers have empathy, and they, you know, it's not all the time, but around 95% of the time, you are having a pleasant interaction, aren't you?
Oh, mostly, yes. Most of the time you absolutely are, yeah. And what I love is when readers talk to you about characters as though they are real.
Because
like I said at the very start, they are real to me. I love that readers think, and they'll talk about their favourite character, and they'll talk about things that characters have done, and they'll say, oh God, I knew that was a mistake, you know.
And sometimes you think they know the book more than the author knows the book.
Oh gosh, sometimes I think they do, because a lot of times they've read them back, you know, and they've read them a number of times, and you're going, oh my God. But you know what I find really, really interesting? And that's that readers will find things in the book that were not the most important thing to you, but it's the most important thing to them. And it's like, you know, that's a revelation to you. You're saying, oh my God, yes, that is true. And I did write that, but I didn't realize it was having a particular impact on you and that it would have a particular impact. And that's fantastic. I mean, I love that, but I'm always really surprised by it. You know, somebody will pick a really, what to me would have been a minor conversation or a minor incident, and they will say, oh, that really resonated with me. And that's fantastic.
Because that is when you read it. Like, it's the moment that it's where you are as a reader in that place. And, you know, I mean, I've done this before too. You read a book 1 year and then you read it the next year, and it really sometimes even can have a different meaning entirely.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why, you know, reading some books, it's like going back to an old friend and then finding something new out about them, you know, that they hadn't told you before. I love, there are books that I reread, you know, and it's just lovely to do that.
All right, Sheila, we've got to let you go. That was a wonderful chat.
Oh, it was super to talk to you again. It really, really was.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Not at all. And thanks to everybody in Australia for all the support that they've given me, because, you know, you guys have. And it's just, as I said before, it's a real privilege. Thank you.
You are much loved. Thank you.
If you'd like more information about Better Reading, follow us on Facebook or visit betterreading.com.au. This podcast is proudly sponsored by Belinda Audio. Belinda audiobooks are available on CD and MP3 from online booksellers and bookshops everywhere, or you can download from Audible, Google Play, or the iBook Store. We've also created our own app called BorrowBox that's available from both the App Store and Google Play. All you need to do to get it working is to download the app, join your local public library, and you'll gain access to the world's best collection of ebooks and e-audiobooks available for you to loan on your phone or your personal device. Belinda, we're here to enable you to escape, imagine, grow, and be inspired through the power of storytelling. Belinda Audiobooks. Anywhere, everywhere.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
If you enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review and check out the other podcasts on the Better Reading Network.